Good morning, everybody. So for the record, so since we've got the recording on for the audio now, so this is Corianne Nguyen from DEQ, Clean Fuels Program, and we are here today for a fiscal advisory committee meeting for the latest of the rulemaking. So this is the Clean Fuels Program corrections rulemaking. Here in the room, I have Elizabeth Elbell from DEQ, there's Bill Peters from Argus, there's Curtis Powers from REG, and Rick Wallace from ODO just walked in. On the call, I think we have Miles Heller from Tesoro, Frank Holmes from WISPA, Jessica Hoffman from RPMG, Elizabeth Hepp from Valero, Josh Scholl from the University of Oregon, Connor Nix from Shell, John Constantino from Manat, and Brian Daugherty as well. Is anybody else called in that wasn't on that list? Oh, okay. I think Jana Gaston is going to be joining us shortly. And then I know Micah was the other person that said that she was going to jump on, so we'll see if she jumps on. So I'm just going to kind of go through quick agenda for today. I don't think this is going to be that long of a meeting, but what we'll go through is I think all of you have the draft. Hello, who just called in?
This is Ian Hill with Sequential Biofuels.
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
So as far as the agenda today, I think all of you have got the draft fiscal that was posted on the website. What we'll do is we'll go through the purpose of just a quick background of the actual rulemaking that we're proposing, and then we'll go over a reminder of what the purpose of this fiscal committee is, and then we'll have a discussion about the fiscal economic impact of the rule. And then we'll follow up just kind of with any questions that you might have, and then next steps as far as the rulemaking.
Hey, Corianne, this is Miles. I know that the call today is very focused on this particular rulemaking, but at the end, if you're willing, could you comment on future rulemaking around cost containment mechanism as well as the status of the fuel availability analysis for 2017. So I just thought I'd give you a warning because I'll ask that question at the end.
Yeah, no problem, Miles.
Thanks.
Okay, so we'll start by just kind of going over an overview of the rulemaking that we are in now. So this is the rulemaking that we actually did go to EQC back in April for a temporary rulemaking. This, the purpose of the rulemaking is to correct the miscalculation of the standards, the clean fuel standards that were adopted in December of 2015. So, I mean, as you all recall, what happened is that I did not adjust for the energy density of the biodiesel and the ethanol when I calculated what the baseline the program was. And so because I didn't do that, the baseline was too low, and then subsequently all of the standards between 2016 and 2025, because it feeds off of that baseline, were also too low as well. So the calculation was fixed, so the energy density is factored in now, and then the proposed standard for baseline for 2015 was reestablished, and then the reductions, the annual 2016 to 2025 standards were also corrected as well. So in the draft fiscal, there's the table of what the current adopted standards as well as the proposed standards. The second piece of how it affected the energy density calculations also affected what the CI values for E5 and E10 were in the lookup table. So those CIs are also adjusted as well. So is there any questions as far as about the changes to those, to the standards and to those CIs? When I did present to the EQC in April, you know, there were no comments made by the commissioners. There was one question from Commissioner Armstrong, I believe, and it was basically wanted to know whether all the stakeholders were aware of the mistake and the change, and that, you know, just that all the stakeholders knew about, were aware of the change. And, you know, I told them that we had done gov delivery, you know, emails to all of the regulated parties and all of the people that are on the gov delivery list, and posted it up on the web. So I didn't think that there was, I thought everybody that should know about the issue knew about the issue. And that was the only question that I received. Okay. So then, so where we are now then is the way that we do our rules in Oregon is, so I went to the commission to seek the temporary rulemaking in April just to kind of get it, that's the quickest action that I could get done. And the importance of that was so that the standards and the CIs, the corrected ones, be in place for the submittal of the Q1 2016 reports. So that was good that I was able to get into the commission and get that adopted at that time. We made the changes in the CSP online system. So the values that are in there now that people are uploading their Q1 reports to reflect these corrected numbers and the corrected standards and the corrected CIs. But when I do a temporary rulemaking, it is only good for 180 days, which means I basically have to kind of turn around and make that temporary rule a permanent rule. So that's what this fiscal advisory committee is for. So the purpose of this fiscal advisory committee is for me to get input from you about whether the proposed rules have a fiscal impact or not, what the extent of that impact is, and whether the proposed rules would have a significant adverse effect on small businesses. And small businesses for this purpose are companies that have 50 employees or less. After we have this advisory committee, I'll take the comments and the input that you have today, I'll write it up, and then the next step, I guess we'll talk about next steps later on, but this is all towards the process of making the rules permanent. So. Hello, who's that just called in? Or did somebody leave? Okay. So following next then on the fiscal and economic impact statement, so the draft document that was posted on the web, the way that I chose to describe what the fiscal economic impact of this rule was is related to the amount of deficits and credits that are generated, the change that occurred because of this proposed rule. Everybody on the phone, so Janet Gastelum just walked in.
Don't worry, so
you can sit wherever you want.
Over here.
So it's on the way that credits and deficits are generated due to the change in the standards as well as the B10, B5, BI. So, I mean, as you all know, the deficits are generated when the CI of a fuel exceeds the clean fuel standards, and that credits are generated when the CI of a fuel is lower than the standard for that given year. And so what we have in Table 3 then is what I did was I just took a sampling of the different kinds of fuels and showed what the net, the credit or the deficit that were generated by the fuels. So for the ones in the first, the top two lines, just the gas and the diesel with the current and the proposed standards, and then the number of deficits in this case that are generated. So there is a net decrease in the amount of deficits that are generated by gasoline and diesel due to the change in the standards. And then for the other fuels like the ethanols, the biodiesels, the electricities, and IC&G, those are just examples. So because all of those are lower than what the standard is in 2016, you can see that all of the credit generation numbers go up because of the change in the standard. So for people, for companies that are importers of fuels that generate deficits, this rulemaking will reduce the number of deficits generated for those fuels. For importers and producers of fuels that generate credits, this rulemaking will increase the number of credits generated by those fuels. In both cases, the proposed rules will make it easier and thus less costly for regulated parties to comply with the clean fuel standards. There's also a situation where people, generators of credit, might see a slight drop in revenue, since this causes the proposed rules will change the amount of credits that are generated. So if there's more credits that are in the system in general, that there's the possibility that the average price for those credits might be decreased slightly, so there might be a slight drop in revenue for credits. And then lastly, for fuel consumers, could also benefit if the savings from these reduced compliance costs are passed on to consumers. So that's the indirect impact of those rule changes. Does anybody have any kind of any comments as far as those points? Everybody agree then?
Yes. Well, this is Jana from OEC. I really appreciate the due diligence taking a look at this and making sure that the numbers are accurate. Kudos to you guys for listening to regulated parties and working in that data really quickly.
Okay. Okay. So the next step for this process so I need to be able to identify, so the our rules for the Fiscal Advisory Committee specify that I need to be able to describe the impact to specific entities. And so firstly, for the direct impact to the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, so these proposed rule changes will not impact DEQ's cost to implement the Clean Fuels Program. So, it's a minor numbers change. We've changed it in the CFP online system, which is where it makes the most impact. And so that's not going to impact cost for us to implement the program. Next. For the state, federal agencies, local governments, and the general public. So the proposed rule changes do not impose a direct fiscal or economic effect on any of these agencies, except if any of these agencies actually are regulated parties. So in some cases, the regulated parties are importing or providing transportation fuels. So in this case, it follows that if they are importing the gas and diesel, that they would have less deficits that are generated. And again, if they're providing the lower carbon fuels, then the amount of credits that they would be generated would be increased. We do have a few local governments that would fall into this category of credit generators. The impacts specifically for, we have to look at both large businesses and small businesses. So for large businesses, when I looked at the list of people that are registered with the program last week, so there's about 42 large businesses that are currently participating in the program. This is a mix of importers of both gas, diesel, and ethanol and biodiesel, as well as credit generators that are providing renewable diesel, natural gas, and electricity to the program. So these proposed rules changes do not impact the number or the type of businesses that are subject to the program. Again, we've already discussed about, if you're importing the petroleum fuels, the clean fuels, about how it affects your credits and the deficit generation. So nothing additionally to that affects large businesses. For the small businesses, so these are businesses with 50 or fewer employees. At last count last week, there was about 54 small businesses that are registered with the program. These are primarily the local fuel distributors as well as some providers of the alternative fuels, propane, natural gas, electricity, as well as just the local distributors within the state for these for the regulated parties. So again, these proposed rule changes do not impact the number or the type of small businesses that are subject to the programs. And additionally, I need to be able to answer whether the proposed rule changes would affect reporting, record keeping, and other administrative activity costs, or whether it impacts equipment, supplies, labor, or other kind of administrative requirements for the businesses to comply with the program. So these proposed rule changes would not affect any of those costs.
Hey, Corianne, it's Miles. I don't have a comment on your specific question. I just want to let you know that I think Todd Campbell is having trouble getting on the call. Sounds like he's on hold. So I don't know if there was a max number of call-ins or anything like that, but I just thought I'd let you know he sent out an email.
Maybe he's using the wrong code. Can you email him back and ask him to go back kind of to the email I sent out this morning, make sure that there's the right, he's using the right access code?
Yeah, well, he responded to the email you sent out this morning with the correct code, so I assume he's using that. But I'll write him back. But he said he's been on hold 18 minutes.
Hello? Did somebody just join?
You believe me? Should be removed.
I know there's no gap on this line.
Yeah, I would think.
Okay, so were there any kind of questions or comments about how I've described the impact to any of the specific entities or to the large or small businesses?
But Corey, this is Joshua Scove at U of O. I guess I have a question about, it's really how we're supposed to assess this. I'm curious if the rule simply increases or lessens the effect, if the rule change simply increases or lessens the effect of the existing rule by the same mechanism, does that count as a separate adverse effect? I mean, I'm thinking about the effects on small businesses that are net generators. Are we supposed to think of that as counting as an adverse effect? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm going to run through the three specific questions that I need to be that I need to ask today. So the first question is, do the proposed rules have a fiscal impact? So that can be positive or negative. So what I've proposed is that is a net benefit to both the regulated parties, or because the amount of deficits that are generated are decreased and the amount of credits that are generated are increased. Does anybody disagree with that assessment? So then the next question then is, so if there is a fiscal impact, the extent of that impact. I know that's when it gets a little hard to kind of start describing about how significant it is. We can quantify, the net increase potential for the credit generation and for the deficit generation, but it's hard to figure out what the fiscal impact is because of the market aspect of credit prices.
There. Corey, and this is Frank. Just to clarify, you're just talking about the incremental change you made by adding the energy density, correct?
Can you try that again, Bryce?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm driving. Just to clarify, this analysis that you're doing is only the incremental change from adding the energy density. It's not the whole rule, correct?
Yes, just for this rule change.
Right.
And then the third question is whether you think that the proposed rules would have a significant adverse effect on small businesses, so those businesses under 50 employees. Now, I don't think it affects the small businesses any differently than it affects any of the small businesses or any of the regulated parties. Those small businesses still will generate deficits for the gas and diesel that they import, but it would be less than for the other four firms. They'll be generating credit. So my assessment is that there isn't. Anybody disagree with that? So then we'll just talk about next steps for this rulemaking then. So I'll summarize this meeting that we've had today, and it'll go into the public notice document for this rule. The public notice will be published on June 15th. That will begin the public notice period. So we'll be taking comments on the entire on the public notice document at that time. It'll include the rule changes. There are no additional rule changes compared to what was involved in the temporary rulemaking. There's a hearing that is scheduled for July 12th to take public comment, oral comment on these rules. And then the plan is to go to the EC meeting that is scheduled in August. So those dates are either August 17th or 18th. We don't have an agenda set for those dates yet, so it could be either day. And I think tentatively that meeting is going to be in Boardman. If you've never gone out to Boardman, like an excuse to go out there, a couple of hours east of Portland. And so that sets the timing as far as the rulemaking. Again, it's I think the most important fact is that numbers are currently in effect is the online system. So for all the reports, they're being calculated. Not like I have to back in. So we feel about questions as far as timeline for the remainder of the rulemaking?
The comment is open until July 12th or Monday after that?
Probably a day after the 12th,
okay.
Yeah. Okay, so then that concludes the Fiscal Advisory Committee part of this meeting. I'll get a meeting summary out, and I think the next thing you'll just see is self-delivery as far as when public commentary starts and commentary, all that good information. So for Miles' questions about kind of what else we have planned for the rest of the year, so what the plan is for meetings to talk about the next rulemaking. So this, I'm calling it the improvement, the CFP program is sort of the improvements rulemaking. So we will begin committee meetings later this year, going into next spring. I think rulemaking, I'm looking at an EQC meeting more kind of like maybe April or June of 2017. So there's going to be a couple of pieces of this new rulemaking. One of the items is for a discussion about implementation of the forecasted fuel supply deferral. So there is some language that's currently in the rule now that talks about the things that the agency has to look at as far as implementing that deferral. And we're going to have discussions with stakeholders about, is it the right methodology? What is the right methodology? What are the right data sources? What are the right assumptions that need to be included into doing that analysis? DEQ will be hiring a consultant to help us put that together into a format so that they will actually do the forecast for 2017. And then DEQ will be in a position to do the forecast for the years after that. The RFP language for the contract is not done yet, so I'm still working on that. Just kind of give you some sense of timing of still need to do the RFP and get a contractor signed and then to begin some of the analysis.
So, Corianne, thanks for that. So you're hiring a contractor to do it for 2017, but then you also anticipate during the next rulemaking process to, I guess, discuss kind of how that went and what improvements would be needed for that process going forward. Did I understand that correctly?
Right. I mean, I think it's more iterative than that. You know, we have some generic criteria that's already in rule, but I think we want to tighten up that language. Get input from stakeholders as far as what that is. Stakeholders will have an opportunity to communicate with the agency and with whoever we hire as the contractor to actually do the analysis for 2017. And then whatever we agree on is what will be part of the rulemaking in 2017. But I think the process for actually doing this first forecast will be a lot of work between the agency and the stakeholders.
Okay. And when do you think that will wrap up? Or will there be a draft?
Well, so I'm still working on the RFP, so I think the contract's
right.
Still out maybe till like July. So whether the actual meetings, the session work is kind of going to be more August-ish, September.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Another big piece of the rulemaking is going to be the additional cost containment for the program. So this is specifically the Senate Bill 324 language that directed the EQC to add in the additional provision for credit trading mechanism. Yeah, I think all of you guys know that the process that California went through to come up with their credit clearance market provision. I think that's one of the likely things that we talk about, but I think there are other kinds of cost containment ideas that we can entertain as well. For the folks that are in Oregon, I mean, we haven't had this cost containment mechanism discussion yet. So I think there's going to be some early education that we need to kind of start with for one, and begin the discussion about what's already in our program, what do the legislators want, what the stakeholders really want to comment about, what they've learned from California, as well as what cost containment measures are in the British Columbia program. So I think it'll be a pretty broad discussion.
Okay.
I'm working on getting workshops set up, kind of do that basic education before we actually begin in the committee work discussion.
Okay. One question. Now, you said additional cost containment measure. For some reason, and I'm probably wrong, but I was thinking it was that this cost containment measure would likely replace the one that's in there that's related to fuel pricing. Is that not the case, or is that not decided?
Yeah, I think it's not decided. I mean, we kind of purposefully let it open-ended to see where the discussion would take us. You know, when I refer to cost containment in the program, I do refer to the deferrals. The three that are in there now are the short-term, the emergency deferral, as well as the forecasted fuel supply, as well as the monthly retail price deferral. So I think the intent was to have, you know, if you're talking something like a credit clearance market to replace a price deferral, I think that's what everybody was kind of, you know, what the intent of that was. But I still think it needs to, whatever we adopt new, needs to fit into the other pieces that we have in the program and what makes most sense here.
Thanks for that update.
A third piece of the rulemaking is going to be looking at expansion of the program for additional credit generation, or maybe to clarify things to make sure that the credit generators, the rules for them are adequate. So I think some of the things that are most obvious is, so the Oregon program right now does not have the provisions for credit generation for transit, the transit district, and then for the forklift in Oregon for the electricity that's used in those two applications. So I think those are some looking at entertaining other thoughts about what other credit generation potential there may be here. And as well as clarifying some of the language for electricity generation from the residential sector. I think that will mean coordinating with the process that's going on in the PUC for Senate Bill 1547 and just some other work that's being, discussions that are being had currently about the utilities and other entities that want to generate credits from the residential EV population. Again, I think there's a lot of kind of people that have just brought up different kinds of ideas as far as other projects. We'll have a meeting about that too.
Great. Yeah, I would definitely like to be involved in that. I mean, just as a heads up, I think it's fine if it's incenting new transit, for example, or new forklift purchases, but the idea of giving credits for, like they did in California, for BART trains that have been around for 30 years, it's not our concept of what the LCFS should be doing. So look forward to that discussion.
So I think that's the big three kind of chunks of work for the upcoming rulemaking. Any questions about that? If you don't have any more questions, I mean, I think the meeting is done. It's 9:36. Thank you, everybody, for calling in. As always, you know, if you do have any questions following up after this, feel free to contact me, and then we'll go through, you know, the public notice period and the comment period and hearing and all that kind of stuff, where we head to this final proposed adoption in August. So let me know if you have any questions. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lori.
Bye-bye.